始まるざますよ。
行くでガンス。
ふんが
まともに始めなさいよ。
Let's move on.
Goofing on since 2006, this is Anime Diet Radio episode number 11. I am your host, Michael Huang. Please introduce yourselves, co-host number one.
Everything you do always have something with Eva. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I was thinking you were on one of those Eva thing again. Anyway, this is Ray from Taipei.
This is Jeremy from Los Angeles.
And yes, actually we are going to be talking about Evangelion today. So yes, unfortunately the charge is true. Everything today is in fact about Evangelion. Well, not everything, but two things. Not just Evangelion, the movie by Hideaki Anno that just came out yesterday, but also the Evangelion, the gospel,in which we're going to talk about the manga version of the Bible, which is just being released by Tyndall House Publishers, and what we think about that. That's going to be our roundtable discussion today.
And, I wonder if that's a coincidence. Evangelion and the manga Bible.
Yeah, you wonder. You really do wonder. It's like two competing Evangelions. I mean, it's like, in a way, I remember I actually posted a...Little thing on the website, actually, because there was actually a Rolling Stone Japanese article, which is supposed to be about the Evangelion remake movie, and it actually had, the title, it was in English, and the title was, Does Evangelion Save Us? And I couldn't resist publishing a little article saying that, you know, well, if you're talking about Evangelion Neon Genesis, you know, as created by Hideaki Anno, no, but I do know of a Evangelion that does save us, and yeah, well, that was my little Christian moment.
Competing shrine. Which one to offer your sacrifices on?
Hey, I did that last little audio column, and I specifically said I offered zero sacrifices to the Hideaki Anno shrine in that one.And so, do you guys have anything? What's been going on with you guys lately, like, in terms of anime?
Well, I just came back from Roots/Anime Roots. I just spent about a week in Tennessee visiting a friend of mine, and actually somewhat on a mercy mission, too, and among many other things, bringing him tons of anime that he hadn't seen. I also met up with some friends who run MTAC.Down in Nashville, Middle Tennessee Anime Convention. Yeah, that's pretty much what's been going on with me. So to kind of relate it to somewhat anime things.
So. Did you cosplay? Did you cosplay?
No, I did not. No, I actually didn't. MTAC actually doesn't. Later, I was just down there with some of the people that started MTAC.
Okay. I'll bet a lot of our listeners are really disappointed.
You'll still just have to use your imaginations. I'm sorry.
Yes, indeed.
As for me, I actually just came out of my two-week hiatus from posting on the website.
Woohoo! Congratulations!
Yep, I was extremely busy with schoolwork and tons of assignments and projects and papers, even though one of those papers actually does have something to do with anime. I wrote a theology and pop culture paper about the issues of the mind-body problem in Ghost in the Shell and The Matrix, and I kind of compared the two and suggested kind of one possible Christian response to all that. And so it's a very academic paper, very heavily philosophical, but I do think that Ghost in the Shell and The Matrix warrant that kind of discussion. But in either case, I actually posted, you know, or scheduled the posting of several old articles from my personal blog, which were about anime, like reviews of different things, including my one and only piece of fan fiction.And I've been very pleased with the response to all the articles and for people saying kind things about them. So thank you, everybody who commented and said nice things about my various five 4-3-year-old, you know, pieces of work.
And Mike says he was writing a theology paper. Right. So that's why he was watching Matrix, and especially Ghost in the Shell, all night long.
I often close the day by watching a movie, one or two of the movies, indeed. And I remember I spent an entire evening watching both Ghost in the Shell's movies back to back. It's really interesting, though. I would have to say that my rewatching of the whole Matrix trilogy and the Ghost in the Shell movies have confirmed my general suspicion that both the first Matrix and the first Ghost in the Shell movie hold up very well as films. But their sequels, even though they're all very intellectually coherent, they just suck as movies.
I would actually agree with that, but I think my wife actually would not. She's actually a big fan of the whole Matrix trilogy. So
really?
In its entirety.
She likes all three?
Likes all three.
I would say that the second movie in the Matrix trilogy actually ended with a lot of promise. And if they had followed through to the end, the things that I think were implied by the end of the second movie, it could have been a lot better. But I thought the third movie was really a wasted opportunity. So
I'm curious, actually, yeah. Jeremy. You say like Heather really likes all three, right? Did she like tell you why?
That would be a question you'd have to ask her. I think we've kind of discussed it, but I couldn't put my finger on anything concrete.
Mm-hmm.
She just has her own reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to give you a disappointing answer.
That's
No, that's fine. That's fine. Just that most people, like 90% of people, says you know 2 and 3 just didn't work out very well.
Well, the third was, I think, worse than the second.
The ending really sucks.
Yeah, the ending, well, I understand what they were trying to do with the ending, actually, but it just doesn't work, just in terms of dramatically.
Oh, I don't know, just fitting Hollywood taste.
Right.
Just fitting the Hollywood taste is what I'm thinking.
I mean, I think it's an example of what happens when you let the ideas in a story or a film get out of hand, and they start to take over very basic, you know, considerations for storytelling, which is, of course, an accusation which has been very frequently leveled at Evangelion. So that's actually going to be our first topic. We're going to talk about the news, and we are going to talk about the release of the Evangelion movie. So without further ado, we're going to go on to our first news item.
Los Angeles, California, and Taipei, Taiwan. This is the ADR Evening News.
As everybody who is in the anime scene is probably aware by now, on September 1st has been called Gainax Day in Japan, because the release of Evangelion Rebuild Number 1, You Are Not Alone, came out that day. Evangelion Rebuild Number 1 is the first of four planned feature-length films which will retell the entire Evangelion saga. It is, in fact, yes, an Anno project. Anno is listed as the general director and the creator, though interestingly enough, he is not actually handling the day-to-day directorial duties. He's leaving that to his two deputies who worked with him on the television show, Kazuya Tsurumaki, also the director of Fooly Cooly and Gunbuster 2, and Masayuki, that's his name, yes. And it has opened to standing room crowds only in Japan, and people were able to get a printed program guide with photos, which there are many pictures of that available on the internet. And the movie actually retells, for the most part, the storyline that's contained in episodes 1-6 of the television series. And from what I've seen, according to reviewers, the first English reviewers that are coming in, there really isn't that many dramatic changes to the plot. Not yet, anyway. Though a lot of the animation quality is massively improved. There's no more the cheap, low-budget tactics that Gainax was infamous for at the time.
What, too many flashing texts every 5 seconds?
Well, that actually only took place, first of all, in the second half of the show. That might actually show up later. I remember Anno promised that he wouldn't, like, do that anymore. Like, it's like, that was something that he said he wanted to move on from. But he may not be able to resist the temptation, because in my opinion, it's not Evangelion without flashing text. So,
I think the pilgrim guide is like your otaku relic.
Right.
It's something you really have to keep and pass down to descendants and descendants until kingdom really comes.
Oh, yeah. They actually made a similar kind of program guide for the end of Evangelion, the concluding movie, in that was released about 10 years ago. And, well, basically, that one actually was more than just pictures. That actually had a glossary, several explanatory sections, you know, that actually helped explain the storyline for once. I mean, it was pretty informative. I've actually read a translation of it before. Well, the most interesting thing is there is a next episode preview at the end of the first movie in true classic form with the old music, with Misato doing it. And yes, Misato promises Sabi Sabi Su at the end.
Yes!
Gotta keep up with tradition, right? Gotta keep up with tradition. And in the preview images, we see some rather drastic changes already, at least hinted at. And so, and in which it seems that something is turning in the gears of Anno's head at the moment. So we'll see what goes on, but it does seem like the excitement should be reserved for the second movie, for those of us who have been eagerly awaiting, like me, just exactly what Hideaki Anno is up to and why the heck he wants to. He hasn't thought of an original idea in years, and he wants to go back to his only money-making story.
For a very simple reason, actually. If you read the news on our website, you know why.
Yeah. To make me shell out more money in front of the Hideaki Anno shrine, indeed.
Oh, so you offer money. See, Jeremy and I were thinking that you were offering something else. We're just not saying what.
Oh. Infant children.
No. Yes, Anno is actually Molech in disguise.
You mean Baal.
Molech was particularly the one who wanted infant sacrifices. They used to offer sacrifices to Molech in the Valley of Hinnom, which later became Gehenna, which is the word in the New Testament for hell.
You know what? Eva never talked about hell. There was no hell anywhere.
No, that's because Eva is Gnostic. And I talked about that in my last audio column, actually, which was just released a couple of days ago.
I just gotta say, and looking up this Eva film, I gotta say they apparently released at the theaters some Evangelion memorabilia. You could get a drink cup with an Eva on top or Rey. And I'm looking at the picture of it here. It's quite interesting because it looks like they're attached to the straw, and Rey, it looks like she's kind of doing some sort of pole dance, which is kind of awkward.
Oh, so. My. Well, it's no surprise.
That's the lens of Loginus.
That couldn't have been unintentional. Come on.
No. The Eva characters have been sexualized from day one, and Anno knows it, too. That's why... Well, there are several instances in throughout the series and the movie where he basically is either deconstructing that or rebuking that even. But not without, you know, having your cake and eating it too.
No, I'm telling you, it's just the lance. You know, not the pole, the lance.
Hey, Ray, tell him about the Lance of Longinus that's for sale.
Oh, gosh, yeah, if you guys haven't... Let's just end the session with this. If you guys haven't read the news... Apparently, the anime blogger sphere, looked like I was the first person. I don't know. In any case, they're selling a not real, but replica Lens of Longinus on Yahoo Auction Japan, basically. Start out as $1,500, and now it's 86 million bucks.
We're not exaggerating about that.
And we're not. If you go on our website. What'd you say?
So we have posted the link for that.
Yes, we have. It's on our website. Basically, you go to our front page, scroll down, and you can just see it. And it has linked to the Japanese auction page, and it has this Japanese muscle lady. I got an excellent joke to end the section. At the cosplay convention, you're holding lens, and you see someone dressing up as Rei Ayanami. What would you say? Well, hey, Rei Ayanami, here's my lens, and you won't be unsafe tonight. Ha 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 ha.
Check out my long, long sphere.
Okay. I don't know. I think it would honestly probably just come across as overcompensation, but that's just me. Is that a lance in your pants? Or are you just happy to see me?
All right. All right, I guess that pretty much does it for all the EVA, non-spoiler EVA news. I'm not actually exactly sure when the next part is coming out. I take it it's probably going to be in at least several months, and if not, sometime next year probably. So anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I'm certainly going to be reviewing it once a fan sub, excuse me, Raw maybe, comes out, because I'm desperate. I did that for, the Byosoku 5 centimeters too. I mean, I saw the Raw version, and I even reviewed it on our site. So, but I just recently saw the full version, so yeah. Anyway, that pretty much does it for this section. And we have just one more news item, or kind of more like a news discussion today. All of you, of course, we know there are about 500 of you who visit our website from Singapore.
A shout out to you guys, and really rough on you guys recently.
Yep, because the Singaporean fans have been hit really hard lately, because Odex, who is actually not a licensee, but a sub-licensee.
The anime Nazi in Singapore?
Yeah, they've basically been filing RIAA-style lawsuits, basically, against not anime uploaders or fan subbers, who have been the usual target of lawsuits in the past, but downloaders. This is the first time anywhere in the world where anime downloaders have been specifically targeted for lawsuits. And it's interesting that it started in Singapore, and been having relative success, actually, in forcing the ISPs to hand over the names of their biggest downloaders. One ISP handed over well over 100 names, and all of them received, you know, notices, and several of them have already paid multi-$1,000 cash settlements to Odex so that they wouldn't be sued in court. However, recently, a Singaporean judge declared that Odex has no legal standing to actually sue these individuals, because they are not, in fact, the actual license holders. They are only sub-licensees. However, Odex is now in the process of appealing. They've hired an American, you know, company that specializes in looking for pirators called BayTSP over, and they also have received public support from several anime studios for their work, including that of Gonzo Digimation, and Toei. So it seems that the battle is really just getting started. You know, the judge's ruling was widely seen as a victory, and there was hope that that would close the case, but yeah. Apparently that is, you know, that's never going to be true for any company that has some money and wants to fight the legal proceeding. So
we just got some money from some of these downloaders.
Right,
exactly. And you know what's funny about that is you say, like, you know, with relative success that they actually got the names. Apparently the first couple ISPs that they went after pretty much sounded like, it seemed like they just kind of like, well, yeah, sure, here, whatever. Just kind of handed over the names, which is unfortunately for the people that whose names and privacy was divulged, and consequently sent letters, probably most likely. It was bad for them, and it's also bad for the company and their PR. I mean,
absolutely.
I want to be known as the company that just basically just completely sold out the privacy of my clients.
Exactly.
Do you think anybody's ever going to buy stuff from them again? Never.
No.
They may win the battle, but they will lose the entire war.
Absolutely. Right. And what I've heard from a good number of Singaporean anime bloggers is that Odex's products to begin with are substandard. That there are Hong Kong bootlegs, which have better subtitling quality, for instance.
Right. And what's really interesting, too, on that note, is also the statements on the web that, and actually they had to release a statement, Odex as a company, that they, in fact, because, you know, they're talking about fan subbers and fan subs, and apparently some of their products, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but, you know, so many years back, they actually did release products that use fan sub scripts on them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was an incident in which they say they hired some fan subbers who got lazy, quote unquote, and released, you know, took word for word a fan sub script. But in my mind, I don't see how that really happens without somebody on the up echelons having some knowledge of that. And there's also other allegations of some of the other staff members of Odex, the higher ups, having run other companies that had been investigated for copyright infringement in the past. So it's really just kind of a really tasteless and unfortunate hypocrisy.
Yeah, I think so, definitely. Especially, yeah, now that you say that, they apparently use fan subscripts as part for their subtitles. That is just, yeah, that is just rank hypocrisy. I mean, you benefit from the work of the fan subbers, and then you turn around and sue the people who benefit from that.
I say that they did give a statement that they hired some fan subbers, some people to sub for them an original script, who used another script, word for word. Now, like, their excuse is that it was the people that they hired, okay, that ended up doing that. So, you know, if that's true, fine, so be it. But I do question whether or not, you know, they actually did or didn't.
You know, given their track record, you know, things that people said about them, even before, like, this is supposedly they were losing money, I think this is just, like, one of these, you know, like, one of these lawsuits where somebody accidentally spilled a drop of coffee onto your pants, and you sue these people for, like, $100 million or something. Of course, I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, there are kind of two distinctions that have to be made here. One is, yeah, the legal aspect of it, which is what the courts are supposed to settle. Because actually, presumably, these are animes which have been licensed in Singapore. You know, licensed for an official release, and people are still downloading it. There's the legally speaking, that is probably a no-go. Okay? I mean, that's the same
correct
here. There is also, of course, you know, the other distinction is that, you know, not only morality, but also just simply, you know, what is good for the industry and what is good for supporting, you know, your artists. And I guess part of the problem is precisely that I think copyright law is actually very clear on this issue. But the thing is that the anime overseas, anime outside of Japan, has always benefited and is largely, and it's the current state of the industry is largely, you know, is due to the activity of fan subbers, which have and always will be technically illegal.
You know, but also too, another thing that you mentioned, yeah, is that they actually the sub licensed material that Odex had a license, yeah, for, and perhaps Anime Suki doesn't pay attention to this, but from the AVPA site, the Anti Video Piracy Association site, which is a big player in this, you know, lawsuit, this whole process, they quote that many people are getting their anime from, they say clearly, Anime Suki.
Huh.
And, you know, anyone who actually uses that site knows that at least that have been licensed in the United States, those animes have been removed. If anything has actually become licensed, Anime Suki removes them, and actually they don't even host any downloads. And actually, it's funny, I'll read the actual quote. It says, there are websites offering free anime downloads, such as Anime Suki, but none of these websites are authorized by the Japanese content owners. Now, it may be one thing that it's not authorized by the Japanese content owners, but I don't understand how Odex is actually becoming involved in this when they are a sub-licensee. And I think the judge was correct in saying that you know, hey, you don't, as they say in Tennessee, you don't have a dog in the fight, buddy. You know, why are you getting all mucked up in this and benefiting from it?
It has to be money. It has to be. Those guys are saying, okay, look, we're not doing so well. And instead of looking at the issues from within, like, oh, I don't know, some American licensed companies aren't doing, they simply say, look, we're in Singapore. We have a stricter law system, and we have a pretty good chance of getting some money back. And then we can use that money to spark another lawsuit or whatever, a follow up or whatever, and we can benefit it. Looking at the business practices, do we really think, even though we're not in Singapore, do we really think that they care about, because people are getting ripped, like the licensors and people who are really getting ripped off, or what? Now, I mean, I doubt it. But another issue is that the fansub system gets abused really bad these days.
Yeah.
You know, you can easily find like some websites, like we probably all know from somewhere, that you can download basically DVD rips of licensed stuff. And that's that's just awful. That's god awful.
Yeah, there's no defense for that morally. Yeah, absolutely. But
look, it's licensed. If you don't want to buy it, fine. Don't buy it. Or save up for it or whatever. Right. I mean, sure, you can say, look, some of these DVDs sucks. But let's face it, dude. If you're talking about American DVDs, most of these DVDs are pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially these days, they're trying to fight off fansubs. They put more stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they release a new series. They have specials, art books, sketches, posters, show notes, CD. Come on, man. What more do we want these guys to do, really?
Yeah, deluxe box sets, you know, with t-shirts and other stuff like that. I mean, I think the American...
Penny still.
That was ADV. Yep, ADV with Najika. Yep, that's exactly it. And, yeah, and the thing...
Come on, they clearly pennies, man. What the hell else do you want them to do?
I actually saw them at Otakon 2004. Like, they were literally throwing them out from the ADV booth. Like,
exactly.
Right. Yeah.
They're literally losing their pennies.
I know. Here's what I think. Yeah. This case really reminds me, if anything, this is going to be a little geeky, but this really reminds me of the whole SCO case with Linux. I don't know if you guys know about that. Do you guys know about that?
I know a bit about Linux, but I don't know about this case. So
SCO is the company formerly known as Caldera. And what they wanted to do was that they claimed that some of the open source code inside Linux was actually their proprietary code, like they owned it. And they wanted every single user of Linux to pay up $600 each, or you know, risk a multi-million-dollar lawsuit because they were mostly going after companies. Okay. And that were using Linux in their servers, and they basically also sued IBM. They sued IBM especially for promoting Linux, you know, for use in their servers. And so basically, the case was largely being fought between SCO and IBM. Of course, here, and the thing is that SCO, by the time they filed their lawsuits, this is the point, they weren't selling any products or licenses anymore. They only existed to file this lawsuit because they thought they had a chance of winning millions of dollars from the lawsuit. That was the only reason why they were in business. But of course, they failed because the combined efforts of IBM, of the, you know, Big Blue, you know, the biggest computer company in the world outside of Microsoft, and Novell, and the, you know, the U.S. District Court judge crushed their case. After even after dragging it out for several years, Novell basically shut them down. And right now, SCO is bankrupt. The thing is that they thought they could make money just from the lawsuit. And it really sounds like ODEX is doing something very similar here. They thought they could actually rely on this as a source of income.
You know, they've given out every type of excuse to say that they're not making money, too. I mean, I actually looked quite extensively into this. And they've made statements that basically the money that they would get would only be something like 20% of their expense to actually pursue this, and that after that, when that didn't seem enough, they said that we will hire an auditor to come in and audit this and make sure that if we are making any money, we'll give it to charity. I mean, you know, it really what is your story? Which is it? You know, I mean. And because people have questioned, like, how much they were actually spending on doing this. I mean, if shown where it didn't look like you would actually really be spending that much to do this, as much as you say you were spending. So I don't know if they intended to get this much press worldwide. I think they kind of thought it might stay. There'd be a little bit of an uproar by the some of the anime fans and locally in Singapore. But I really don't think that they expected it to become this big of an international affair.
Conspiracy theory time. The thought crossed my mind that it is quite possible, or not, maybe not quite possible, but just I wonder how much of this is a trial balloon, in a way. It's a way of testing the viability of going after downloaders in general.
Oh my god, are you saying like 18... excuse me. American companies actually made a secret had a secret conference call with these people in Singapore.
Not American companies, Japanese. Because they've received, ODEX has received public support.
Huge support, yeah.
Yeah, from certain Japanese
studios. And
that's what
their big appeal is going to be based on.
Yeah.
And that was how they had approached it, that the Japanese companies officially supported them via, some statements and letters and whatnot, but hadn't had any of their representatives in court or anything like that. And I wonder how much they're willing to actually really get involved. They said they would send representatives if necessary, but I really wonder if they will actually do that for what might end up be the sinking boat. And, it was a good way to actually maybe keep themselves a little distance from it, not really look entirely like the bad guy and say, we're just protecting our, interest. And true, there is something to be said for that, but at the same time, I don't know how much they want to really, end up being involved. So, yeah, I mean, that could well be.
Trial.
It could well be.
I guess I'll close with this. Well, think about the alternative, though, on the other hand. What if the Japanese company sent a letter saying just the opposite? We don't support what they're doing. They're essentially saying we don't care about copyright. And they can't say that. I mean, they can't say that.
Very true.
I mean, it's... The law on copyrights is not quite the same as trademarks, but I think there's a kind of a similar principle going on here. Copyright infringement has to be pursued by the copyright holder. Okay, in trademark law, if you don't defend your trademark, you lose it. Like let's say some other company called Microsoft decides to start, and big Microsoft Corporation in Redmond, Washington decides not to go after this little company. Well, let's say in another 5 to 10 years. That other little Microsoft grows, and Microsoft didn't defend their trademark. Microsoft loses their trademark. Big Microsoft. That's the law. And it's the same with it's not the same, but it's similar in copyright law, which is that no government actively goes after copyright infringers without a complaint specifically from people who are authorized to pursue that copyright violation. It is a passive process, basically. And if the Japanese company said something like, ODEX doesn't speak for us, they're basically saying, go wild in Singapore. And so, writing a pro forma letter saying, we support what they're doing, we don't like piracy, blah, 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 is just a way, of avoiding the issue, I think. That's probably the most reasonable and the realistic explanation. It's just, politicians do that all the time. Have any of you guys ever written your congressman? on any given issue? Have you ever read the reply?
And they decry this particular thing that you're, writing about, or say that they really care about it, and the reason they're doing exactly the opposite of what you're saying is because they truly care about it.
Yeah, and so it's a form letter designed to, basically say, I don't really care about this, and in a polite way, without contradicting yourself.
Japanese are pretty old-fashioned when it comes to business still. Mm-hmm. They had to care somewhat.
No,
they're fighting piracy in Japan themselves.
No, they are very concerned about piracy in Japan, actually. They really don't like American fan subbers, because not just Americans are downloading it, Japanese are too. So it's like...
It used to be fine, okay, until the system gets abused like crazy. All right? Used to be, they say, oh, wow, interesting promotion for us. But now it becomes, oh, great, interesting ripoff for us.
Yeah. And the thing is that... I guess the question that I guess we'll leave with is, the system is very liable to abuse. Is it inherently liable to abuse? Does the fact that it's electronic, instant, and free mean that, in a way, there's no way to fight it? Unless you decide to crack down in the way the RIAA has. But even the RIAA's lawsuits haven't really all been all that effective. So it's really...
They still failed in several of them, actually.
Yeah. And so, I guess we'll just leave it on that. And so, that pretty much, that kind of turned into almost kind of another quasi-roundtable discussion, but I think that worked pretty well.
I have a question, though. Is the Bible copyrighted? Could you legally make a fan sub version of it in a manga?
You yeah, try Dou Jing Shi.
Yeah. Well, you see, the thing with God, you see, is God is the owner of the really smiting Supreme Court. So, like, if God has a problem with you, I would say that there doesn't even really need to be a trial.
But dead. You're just dead. You're
right. just lightning bolts. Really? You know.
You're just going to hell, son. That's what you're going to do. I'm sorry. But you ripped me off since yesterday, and you're just going to hell. Bye-bye.
For the last time. And this time it's personal.
You have failed me for the last time, Admiral.
And so, yeah, that is our little introduction to talk about our final roundtable discussion topic. And we're talking here about, of course, the manga version of the Bible. Apparently, in cooperation with Tyndale House Publishers, which is a large evangelical publishing house here in the United States, a group of Japanese Christian artists is trying to make a manga-fied version of the Bible. And the first volume has just been released, and it's called Manga Messiah. It's an adaptation of the gospel story and you know, from the four gospels in the beginning of the New Testament, the story of Jesus, basically. And they plan to come out with, I believe it's five more volumes, or no, it's a total of five volumes, three volumes of Old Testament stories and two volumes from the New Testament, and or three, actually, sorry. And so basically, thing is that, you know, all of us on this podcast are Christians. I'm actually in seminary. I'm actually studying the Bible in the future for a living. And so this project really caught my attention when I first saw it on Anime News Network. And one of the, you know, distinctive features of this project is, and they trumpeted this into all the marketing material, that this was, you know, a project by Japanese artists. This is not an American manga knockoff or some Americans producing something in manga-like style. It is actually produced by Japanese Christians. The text in the dialogue, you know, it comes from the Bible, but it was all originally written in Japanese. And it is in color, interestingly enough, which is a little bit different from most manga. But the thing is that, yeah, this is a Japanese original project, but with a very explicitly evangelistic intent. The company that is kind of sponsoring this in Japan, which is called Next Manga, explicitly wants to use these manga-fied Bible stories to spread the Christian gospel throughout the entire world to children, you know. And what they're doing is that they're releasing it in the United States through Tyndale House first, primarily to raise money so that they can actually print it in Japan and also in many other languages as well. There's even a little blurb on their website, on Next Manga's website, that talks about their translation and, you know, shipping effort to go send it to children in Uganda, of all places. Hi, shout out to all our African readers. And,
yeah. It's really interesting that this project actually came together, because from my understanding, something like less than 0.1%, I may have my numbers off here, in Japan are actually professed Christianity.
One to 2% at most.
1 to 2%. I'm sorry, not 0.1. So.
And the thing is that the social pressure in Japan, if you're a Christian, is very heavy. There are a number of Japanese students actually at my school, Fuller Theological Seminary, and they have there's even one of their testimonies is even on the Fuller website, and she talks about how, yeah, when she became a Christian, her family threatened to disown her, and so the pressure to not be a Christian in Japan is pretty intense.
Real pressure, even in the Western world. Well, not Western, but
I would say it's a fairly different level of pressure, mostly because Christians are such a tiny minority. And whereas in the Western world, most people still profess to be Christians, at least. Even if they don't, it doesn't make too much of a difference in how they live, necessarily. It's,
The manga author of this project, she actually met Christ in New York City. She actually became Christian in New York City.
Ah,
not
yes.
In Japan.
Right.
So that's... Then she happened to be an artist, and she used to draw Dou Jing Shi, you know, yaoi stuff.
Really?
Probably.
I see.
Probably. I mean, when they contacted her about this project, she thought, well, the thing I used to draw were wrong.
Mm.
So Now she's not going to do that anymore. If you look at the 12 disciples, for anybody who read the Fujoshi vocabulary, you cannot really see yaoi pairing going on.
No.
This kind of doesn't work out. Yes, you got pretty looking guys, but their hair colors are wrong. All the Fujoshi out there, maybe you could say, you're a guy, you don't know anything. Well, I don't, but I've read a couple of Fujoshi manga, so. No, I've read a couple of manga that talks about this stuff. Mm. So, you know.
Yeah. And, yeah, I guess the thing is that I actually, but all of us read some of the, nextmanga.com actually has some sample pages and sample pictures from the project, including, you know, the story of John the Baptist, there's one section of that, and then there's another section for the crucifixion. And as well as character profiles, including all 12 disciples, and also the some of the other main characters, like Joseph and Mary, Mary and Martha, and Lazarus, and some of the other folks. And some of the drawings actually are kind of interesting. I think that pilot kind of looks like Gendo without a beard.
And, next thing you know, he's going to put both his hands, he's going to fold his hands under his chin.
I know. He really does look like, and actually if you go to the crucifixion sample pages, he does sort of do something like that, actually.
What?
He's got the same character, he's got the same haircut as Gendo, and he's kind of like the, and it's really...
I gotta say, this isn't the first time, and I don't know about whether or not this was produced by a Japanese artist or not, but that there's been a project, an animation, anime-based project, that it has some relation to Christianity. I mean, like, if anybody remembers the Superbook.
Superbook is Japanese, yes. Hmm. Superbook is Japanese, and I actually remember watching that as a little kid.
And strangely enough, and I can't find any other reference to this, I did come across something that stated that even Tezuka
mm-hmm.
worked on a Christian project. I don't know if that was Superbook or not, but...
it isn't.
He worked.
Yeah.
It was another project, and I don't remember which project that was.
He actually had the cooperation of the Vatican for that project.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, that's right, with the Vatican.
Yes, and so, apparently even the Vatican was really interested in doing some manga or some cartoon, or at least some anime. So, yeah.
The Pope watches anime. That's great.
I know.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome. I want to see him at the next convention then. I want to see him.
Man, that guy cosplays every day. Come on.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean,
did you know in South America they have a manga featuring the Pope Man?
No, you know, he needs to watch Trinity Blood. See, Trinity Blood, you see, in Trinity Blood, the Roman Catholic Church is the last is Earth's last hope against the vampires. And
yes.
I'm not kidding about this. And the Pope is like a main character. The Pope is like this angsty Vishonen guy who's like a teenage angsty Vishonen guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, you know, the same as now, except he's old and not Vishonen.
Watch D. Grayman. You know, they're actually exorcists. Okay, Catholic Church disown that, but they actually fight demons.
Hmm.
You know, like it's their wildest fantasy. You know, instead of just praying, they could say, "Okay, I'm gonna kick some demon asses."
And then they should they need to pair up the Trinity Blood Pope cosplayer with Alucard from Helsing, because Alucard, you know, he's the main vampire in Helsing. See, Alucard is a really proud Protestant member of the Church of England, and he's very and he's not afraid to state that fact. And so you have
is Alucard, because he's like a servant of the Protestant group, if I remember correctly, that you're talking about vampire.
Yeah, I'm talking about the vampire. So we have we can fight the Reformation all over again with vampires.
Right.
Yeah.
Cosplayers start fighting each other, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, back onto our original topic, which was the manga messiah or the manga Bible. I have to say, I mean, when I saw the news, I actually posted a little post on Anime News Network forum about this. Thing is that I guess I found out some more information about it later, and it sort of assuaged some of my fears. But I was, to be honest, a little skeptical of how well this could turn out. And
Unfortunately, a lot of quote-unquote Christian media is, and in fact, I'd say the majority of it, unfortunately, is very poor. Now, yeah. That aside from, you know, any works of any novels, any written works, or anything like that. Some of them, those are extremely well done. But
look, all you have to do is
visual
get people
media.
To draw. Sorry, get people to draw doujinshi. Not people drawing doujinshi, then it's successful.
Yeah, I know. It's. I mean, I saw jokes on the Anime News Network forum immediately about slashfic. I mean, about like Jesus and disciples slashfic, David and Jonathan slashfic. I mean, they were just asking for it in a way. I mean, when they proposed a project like this, I mean, because they don't know the anime fan community. Obvious. I mean, they don't, and so it's like the thing is that when I first saw the news, when I saw the name Tyndall House show up. I gotta be honest, alarm bells immediately went off. It was...
Right.
Yeah, and it was... But, I mean, later on, I realized that this is not an American project. And that sort of assuaged my fears, but then I read the sample pages. And, you see, my fear of this project was that it was going to be... Look, it's the Bible, but manga style. And it wouldn't add... It wouldn't add anything. It wouldn't do anything that's actually, you know, unique... Show you things in a different light that actually takes advantage of the medium. Like I like, you know, a crucial scene obviously in any production like this is the crucifixion, and that's actually one of the sample pages that they put up. And really, there has been almost 2,000 years of Christian art, 2,000 years of people creatively, you know, bringing out the horror, the pathos, and the sadness of the crucifixion. You know, and we have some of the greatest artistic masters who have ever lived, you know, spent their whole lives doing stuff like that. You've got Michelangelo's Pieta or something like that, or Grunewald. I mean, obviously, you know, not that it may be a little unfair to compare a manga to Michelangelo or Grunewald. But at the same time, the reason why those works worked was precisely because the artist was able to capture something in really sharp focus and detail that you could learn or get by reading the text, but it wouldn't necessarily be immediately obvious. It'd be something that would actually show you something new, and because it shows you something new or startling or brings something out in a different light, then the message becomes that much more powerful. It's not just all about message. And another warning bell was when I saw Next Manga's intentions, like, you know, this art is intended to evangelize. Okay? You see, art is not propaganda, no matter how well-intentioned. Good art is not propaganda. Good art has to be good art first. Yep. Otherwise, and this is a conviction that I've strongly come to in recent years, bad art is bad witness when it's declared as Christian art. Bad art is bad witness.
Unfortunately, that's a lot of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, bad art. And I have to say that my judgment on the sample pages, at least, was that I can't call it bad, in a sense
it's not terrible. It's just not... There's not anything, you know, particularly exciting about it or unique or really astounding about it. I mean, it doesn't really capture...
No.
Your attention or, you know, your... Like you said, your focus.
They stuck to the biblical text fairly closely in the samples that they put in. That's good. I consider that good. It can be done very well, even with just the original dialogue. You know, a really good example of that is there was a Jesus movie made in the 60s by Pier Pasolini called The Gospel According to St. Matthew, and the shtick of that movie was that every single piece of dialogue actually is in the text. And it was still a stunningly artistic, you know, shocking in some ways, and very radical portrayal of Jesus anyway. Because it worked as art. It has to work as art first. And the thing is that it's just the Bible with pictures. It's just like any other children's Bible. There was actually a children's illustrated Bible that was, you know, mostly told in pictures that you could buy for like $20 per volume or something like that. I remember seeing them in dentists' office lobbies. I mean, it was... And this looks basically just like a slightly a manga-fied version of that. And in a way, that's wasting the potential of the medium, in my opinion. I mean, I do want to say another positive thing about it, though. Before I sound like I'm being too negative and being too snobby because I'm in seminary, but they actually do seem to have put in a little biblical scholarship work into it, and I appreciate that as somebody who actually enjoys that sort of thing. They kept the Jewish or the Hebrew pronunciations for most of the main characters. Joseph is Yosef, you know. Mary is, you know, Miriam. That's and Jesus himself, of course, is Yahushua, you know, because Jesus is actually Joshua in Hebrew terms. And they didn't do that consistently for all the characters. I mean, but it's but they did that for the main characters. And I think that for one thing, I've been seeing that more and more in a lot of biblical fiction, like the recent Nativity story. You know, they try to capture some of the Jewishness of the characters.
Okay, I think one positive point on this is that some of the women are really good looking. are really good looking.
Only you would really see that and focus on that really intently, Ray.
Yeah, some of the character designs they're not bad. They're not remarkable. I mean, I would say they almost verge on stereotypical anime, you know what I mean? Like, you know. Yeah. But at the same time, they're easy on the eyes. I'll say that much. I do think that, what is it? John the disciple, the youngest disciple, the beloved disciple, he does seem kind of girly, but that's actually part of the traditional Christian art.
In any case, he looks too happy.
Yeah, he looks too happy for a guy that Jesus named Thunderboy. That's one way of translating it, Thunderboy. He and his brother, and Thunderboy. Because they were known, he and his brother James were known for being very irascible, for wanting to call down fire from heaven on a village that didn't particularly appreciate them. So
Thunderboy sounds like a superhero's name.
Oh, I mean, thing is that I think our Bible translations really often miss the humor of the Bible. Jesus was actually really, really sarcastic a lot of the time, but the thing is that doesn't come through when you don't see the puns, and you don't see the parallelism, so you don't see a lot of that stuff. Yeah, and the thing is that especially the Old Testament in Hebrew loves, like, the Hebrew writers of the Bible love puns, and so the whole tradition of Jewish humor, you know, goes all the way back to the Bible. Well, yeah, basically the thing is that I have to say I am a little skeptical, and I think a lot of us are kind of skeptical, mostly because, yeah, it doesn't seem like they're doing very much that's really special with the medium. And but I'm still probably going to take a look at it, you know, the whole thing when I'm able to find it. And I'm just interested, you know, just as a Christian and as a Bible person, you know, I just want to see how they handle it and see if they do anything unique. The samples that I've seen just, you know, aren't all that promising, to be honest. But I really do hope they succeed, because I'm always encouraged, kind of like with the Lord of the Rings movies. You know, you hope that when people watch the movie, they're going to read the book. And it's the same thing with the manga Bible. You know, what they're going to be doing is that they're going to be putting out a Bible translate, the entire New Living Translation of the Bible alongside the manga sections. And so if it gets people to read the original book, then I think I'll be relatively happy, you know.
Wow. Which even from an academic standpoint, we don't strictly view it in that personally, it is actually a really, I mean, incredible work. Incredible work.
Yeah.
I mean, if people would actually read the stories, actually, there's so many good stories in there that are just really attest to, you know, people's struggles and experiences and history. I mean, and really are just quite engaging. So, you know, I think if a person was able to get that across in a visual format, then great. But I think, you know, what we're saying here is that it wouldn't, like, they've really done that yet on the surface. And, right. You know, and that's aside from the, you know, the just off the top, off the cuff, oh, it's the Bible and manga, ki thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously we view that a little differently, but, you know, we can understand why people actually do have that sort of skepticism, especially when oftentimes what they see is, not exactly, I wouldn't say substandard, but a little less than, you know, than great works coming out.
I mean,
so
yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, the problem with evangelical art, and I say this as an evangelical Christian, the problem with evangelical art is its timidity. We are scared of real life. There's no other way of putting it. Historically speaking, we have tried our best to sanitize the Bible. And
there's some really gnarly stuff in there. I mean,
yeah, it's you know what story I think I'm going to close with this. You know what story would work really terrifically well in graphical format? The uncensored version of the entire David story. The thing is that David is, you know, we learned in Sunday school that David is this wonderful, awesome guy who's very godly, a man after God's own heart and all that stuff. You have to read 2 Samuel and then the beginning of 1 Kings to realize, actually, yeah, he's got a lot of good points, but this guy did some horrible things, not just the Bathsheba stuff, too, especially in the second later part of his life. Some of his children do horrific, terrible things. And the thing is that the story plays out as a whole as a tragedy. David's last moment on earth, his last advice to Solomon as he's dying in his deathbed, is really awful. Like, it's like Mafia Don kind of stuff. Like, basically, go whack all the enemies I promised not to kill. Mm-hmm. Basically. And, you know, I can imagine a really compelling drama starting with that scene. And then going back to tell the entire story of David's life. He's like, how did he get here?
And the biblical Godfather.
Yeah, sort of. Very much so. Very much so. And the thing is that the Bible alone itself contains so much drama. Such great storytelling and such great character. It's a terrible shame to waste that. And honestly, the part that I saw of the crucifixion just was not that promising. And if you can't get that part right, and that's like, you know, the most dramatic part of the Bible for me. I mean, what else can you get right?
Yeah, I don't know to direct this.
You need somebody who has a feel for the darker side. It's
get Ishii to direct this.
Yeah, and so really, anyway, thing is that, anyway, I think we've already, yes. I think we've spoken our piece. So, yeah, this pretty much concludes episode number 11 of Anime Diet Radio. And we have been goofing on and eating it right since 2006, and we hope to see you again next time. I'm your host, Michael Huang.
This is Ray from Taiwan.
This is Jeremy from Los Angeles.
See you all again next time.
Eat it right.